Coming up, it's At the Closing Table, the podcast where Ariel and Ashley talk all things real estate, from local market trends to first-time buyer tips and the stories behind every sold sign. New episodes drop the first Saturday of every month. Catch them all on the Reggae Rocks app or at reggaerockstx.com under the podcast tab. Now, let's head to the closing table.
Hello, everyone. This is Ashley Pfeiffer
and Ariel Brooks Stevens,
and you're listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley.
We were just talking about how long it seems like it's been since we saw each other because we did our podcast early.
That's what you get for being ahead of schedule.
We will never be prompt and
never again.
No, we will not, because it's been like 5 years.
It feels like it.
It does.
It does. So many things going on.
Oh, Lordy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm a little crazy.
Myself. Uh-huh. I felt a little bit crazy. And like, I'm bringing friends now.
I know. And my children are home for college, which is a lot of eating. There's a lot of food preparation going on in my house.
Okay, funny that you just say that, because we were just talking about the fact I'm not cooking, but our oldest was going to come home, and then he decided to take 9 hours in summer school, so it's killing him. And then our youngest has an internship, so he didn't come home. So we're still empty nesting all summer. I mean, yeah, we're living the dream.
Kind of jealous. You know, I can't say that out loud since I'm supposed to say how happy I am that my children are home for the summer. I'm so happy.
You know what? We've talked about this before. We are. You know, we're happy to see them. We're happy they're productive so far, adults.
Yes.
You know, I mean, everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I know that we're very lucky, because that's not always the case.
No. So. And in fact, that's a huge, that will tie in a little bit to some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. But just the fact that so many children in this generation can't punch their way out of a paper bag.
Oh.
And it's our fault.
I know.
I mean, not necessarily mine with our situation, because we did things a little differently than our peers. Mm-hmm. Like, my kids had to have a job to pay for gas. They wanted a car. But so many kids just do not. They don't want to work. They don't know how to work.
Yeah.
Their common sense is at an all-time low.
Yeah.
I blame social media and
all
that. But
I think there's a lot of factors, absolutely. I will say, though, that previously we have talked about the young homeowners, you know, and that they're not buying, they can't buy, they can't. The past 2 weeks, I have closed 3 super young buyers. And I'm talking like 120, 120. Yeah, young.
Oh my gosh, I would
kids.
Be so excited. Were you so excited?
I was. But listen to this. So you know how we always talk about where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes.
And when things get like they are, people start figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what has happened. These kids have decided, hey, wait a minute. I want to build generational wealth, and I want to do it with real estate. So how am I going to do it? And they came up with some pretty creative things.
I mean,
we've got one, you know, where they have gone to somebody else who had an IRA, and now we're using IRA money.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, there are so many options, like you and I have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of understanding those options, knowing who to talk to about those options.
Yes.
And so I just, in the past couple of weeks, I just thought, oh my gosh, I've got to remember to tell Ariel.
Yes. Well, I'm hearing more and more, and I don't know if my algorithm is geared towards that, but I know our financial planner has talked to us about, instead of waiting until your kids are in their 60s and you're on your deathbed to inherit anything, help them buy a house.
Right.
Help them buy a car.
Right.
In any way, shape, or form, help them now, because it sets them up.
For future success.
It really does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I just thought that it was interesting that of the 3 kids, and I call them kids, I mean, they really are when they're that young. Of the 3, 2 of them mentioned generational wealth.
Yeah.
And so I do know, you know, the whole social media thing has a lot of drawbacks, but there are some young kids on there that are starting to talk about financial advice and figuring it out and understanding how to build wealth, whether it's, you know, through real estate or through, you know, some of the other options. And I think this next really young generation is starting to realize, hey, if I don't get my act together, I'm going to be 45 trying to buy my first house, or I'm going to be.
Well, because the average American is 40 before they can purchase their first home.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, was it last time or maybe when Caleb was on with us that we were talking about, you know, what's going to change? How are we going to get out of the cycle that we are in? Well, I think this is how it starts. You know, the young kids start saying, whoa, I'm seeing what either my older siblings or my aunts and my uncles, you know, because a lot of times we've got those generations where we've got aunts and uncles that are not a whole lot older than, you know, the nieces and nephews, right? I've got that in my family. I mean, you just see that sometimes. And I think that this younger group is seeing some of the issues that the older kids are having and are maybe, I don't know, I don't think I want to say learning from their mistakes, because I'm not sure that these are their mistakes. I think we've got bigger issues at hand that are causing all of these issues.
Well, and my hope too is that we get to a point where the kids are like, okay, this is going to be, it's a slog. It's boring.
Yeah.
It's not sexy to just buckle down and save the money.
Right.
Or to buckle down and say, okay, I'm only putting 3.5% down, so I'm going to have PMI on this loan.
Right.
And it's going to cost me X amount of dollars every month, but in the end, it's going to be so worth it.
I did see something, and we've talked about this many times too, about, you know, what's it going to take? And, you know, because these kids are buying their $20 lattes and, you know, that kind of thing, whatever. And so somebody was comparing, you know, this is what they used to make, and this is how they afforded what they did.
Yeah.
And they started you know, throwing all the things in that we take for granted every day, you know, all of those expensive coffees and just the money that we spend on keeping up with the Joneses. That wasn't how maybe our parents did it, and for sure not the way our grandparents did it. So I think it's just interesting that I've just been seeing all of this stuff lately.
Well, and there are books, I think, that are very well written and applicable or geared towards kids. One of them is called The Latte Factor. I believe David Bach wrote that. If it didn't, then I'm sorry. It's a real simple way to go, okay, I could probably do this a little bit faster, a little bit easier. So, anyway, into what we talked about, which all of this is applicable. The Road to Housing Act, neither Ashley nor I really get super excited about talking about housing bills and bipartisan agreement
and legislation. Yeah.
I got no time for that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, however, as one of the first almost unanimously agreed upon bipartisan bills, there's a new housing bill that has come out that hopefully is going to have some really positive effects on not just the housing market in the short term, but how we weather some of the challenges that we're having these days with inflation, interest rates, you're just setting up the next generation for maybe a little bit more success than this one has had. I'm going to cough, so I'm so sorry.
Okay, do it.
I'm so sorry.
Let me get my mask out.
Oh, my gosh.
Just kidding.
Bite your tongue. Bite your tongue. We've all been there. We're not going back. No one's wearing masks.
No, we're not.
Anymore. I want to say that this bill was supposed to be set on the president's desk today for signatures, but I could be wrong in that as well. I do know that it's gone through Congress, so it's just a formality. But the ROAD, it stands for Renewing Opportunity in the American Dream, which I think is always interesting to talk about. The American Dream is always for home ownership. There's a vast amount of people whose American Dream does not include home ownership, but we're going to still talk about it if it is. I don't think it's a shock to anybody that we're in a housing shortage. Any of us agents who are out showing property to folks, for the first time in a long time, I mean, I'm seeing multiple offer situations. If a house is priced well, well kept in a good area, I mean, they can be going pretty fast. I think over the last couple of weeks, people freaked out a little bit when interest rates went up a little bit and the issues with Iran, what's happening with gas prices.
But we just kind of touched on that before we started, you know, about the fact that we right now are busy because we got, you know, contracts, we're going strong, but now, you know, they're not coming in like they were. And it, I mean, as soon as everybody turns on their TV, they quit writing contracts. So,
well, and I think now more than the interest rate, it is the cost of living. With my children home, we go to the grocery store more often.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've never had such large weekly grocery bills, like, right, for just the food. Like, take out the Tide detergent, right, and pour dog food. We don't feed the dog anymore, so we can feed the children. Poor dog's on a diet. I think those more than anything, when you sit down and put the pen to paper.
And I think the war, I really, really think that has a big effect on just the security of how people feel about, do I want to buy this new house or do I not want to sign this contract?
Well, and we really have a very short memory.
Mo, don't we?
Because, I mean, the last time we went to war was after 9/11. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. My dad was military. So, I mean, I remember 1990 and Desert Storm. Right. I mean, I remember the Iraq War, which lasted for a very long time, to the point which I think we became a little bit numb to it. Mm-hmm. Because we were just always there.
No.
So I think, again, I think there's a huge challenge with our algorithms. And I'll get off this soapbox really quickly. But you're only fed what you pay attention to. And if you're not paying attention to the war, you're being fed something else. So you may not even pay much attention to it at all.
Right.
So it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yep.
But this bill is aimed at helping streamline a lot of the challenges that sometimes we're up against to build more homes. I think about Bernie, for an example, the inspection process. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes it takes forever to get a permit, and then it takes forever for this inspector to get out to inspect, like, the electrical, for an example, in a brand new build. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a very necessary step, but we just don't have enough inspectors,
right,
to make that process very smooth.
So when you're talking about that, are you talking about City of Bernie stuff, or are you talking, because those type of inspections, mm-hmm, are like your certificate of occupancy and that kind of stuff, that is strictly city stuff.
Correct.
And then in the county, you still have to have the home inspected as it's being built and all that. Yes. But you don't have that last certificate of occupancy piece? And I'm really asking because I don't know. I mean,
that's a really good question. I know there's certain things that they do inspect, wells, septics.
Right.
I believe you still have to have your electrical inspected and all that.
Yeah.
But regardless of where you are, any building process requires those inspections, and they don't necessarily delay, because they can be such a gift for a homeowner, right, to make sure it's done right. But some of the other things, I mean, we can argue whether the UDC was a great idea or not till we're blue in the face, but it did create a lot of challenge to getting something built, because if you were required to put a sidewalk in front of your house, you weren't getting your stuff done until you put a sidewalk in front, right, of your house, even if you were the only house on the street to, right, have to do a sidewalk. So I think some of those are trying to streamline that process and really take a look at what's going on.
So is this going to override some of our county?
No.
Okay.
No. Well, the United States is very much set up on, you have your federal government, right, your state's government, your local governments. Things, mm-hmm, will still stay local. However, but from a larger standpoint, some of the environmental things that have been a problem for certain areas of the country, I think they're going to address those.
Okay.
We know that in urban areas, there's a lot of vacant buildings because commercial businesses, if they sent people home, they don't need all those businesses.
Right.
So there's a lot of talk of how do we convert that into housing, because, yep, we just need housing. Right. So I think some of that's going to be good. Something that I don't sell manufactured or modular homes. It's not something that has come into my real estate practice. However, if you look at what modular homes look like these days, oh my gosh.
I know.
They're amazing. They take half the time to build.
Yep.
And sometimes a considerably less amount of money. A lot less money.
I was about to say almost always.
Some of the FHA financing, HUD requirements, things like that have been in place made it a little bit prohibitive. Now, we're not going to talk about an HOA that doesn't allow manufactured homes, because that's on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis. But I really think that just with what we're able to do, like, you can 3D print a house now.
Yeah.
So I think some of those building, maybe it's within the building codes and whatnot, that's going to, mm-hmm, change a little bit, because it probably needs to change. We need an alternative. We can get into the environmental impact of cutting down all of our trees. I own an old house. If you look at my framing versus how houses are framed these days, I mean, I have, like, they're putting two and three pieces of wood where I only have one,
right,
because my house is old growth wood from back, right, in the 20s. So I think some of this is going to be alleviated with the ability to use more manufactured modular homes.
So it's funny that we're talking about that because, you know, here in Kendall County, we just don't have very many manufactured homes.
No.
We have a couple of subdivisions that allow them. And then, of course, you know, if you own private land, you own a ranch or whatever.
Right.
But it is surprising how often we as a title company deal with them,
mm-hmm,
because of the acreage, right? It's,
yeah,
my hunting cabin. It's my, right? I just pulled it on there. Or no, I'm, you know, pulling that off.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that if you are going to go the mobile home route, there are lots of things that you need to know, lots of questions that you need to ask.
Yeah.
They are not handled as differently as they once were, because used to, back in the old days, you know, you had to take the skirting off, you had to take the tongue off, you had to take the tires off, then you attached it real, right? It was like a huge production.
It was a big,
and it was like $7,000,
yeah,
or something like that,
mm-hmm,
to convert it. Okay, so nowadays, that's much easier, and the process is all handled through the state.
Yeah.
Texas Department of Housing handles the conveyance of, hey, Ashley has a mobile home, she's going to sell it to Ariel. Okay, in order to do that, I have to say, here, Ariel, do you want this personal property, or do you want it as real property? Once you attach it as real property, you better be real sure you want that mobile home there forever and ever, amen. Because in order to remove it, it is something else.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm-hmm. So long as people understand how to do it,
right,
what the consequences of those actions are, they're fabulous. And you are right about, they're like little McMansions now.
Yes, they really
they're
are.
They're beautiful. I have a friend who bought some ranch land and she was going to build a house and she was going to do, and then she was like, well, you know, my sister said, let's go look at this mobile home. And now she's like, why would I, mm-mm, spend the time to build a house when I can just have this put?
Well, and I think too, what's interesting is the modular home, because you've got the mobile home, which obviously is on wheels.
Right.
But the modular home has really changed the game, because it's like a prefab kit where...
And they come and install it. So they,
yeah,
bring it... So they
bring it in sections.
Right? This is the one I'm thinking of, where they build it offsite and they bring it and they put it together.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Now, we had a builder, gosh, 15 years ago that was doing them here,
mm-hmm,
in Kendall County.
Mm-hmm. They look so nice now.
You can't tell the difference.
You
they
cannot.
Do. Yeah. You would not know if it was, you know... And so... Do they put these on like a concrete slab, or they put it on pier and beam?
It depends on what you'd like. Most of the,
okay,
time it's pier and beam, because that's an easier way to get your, you know, the
plumbing
and electric,
yeah,
and all that stuff. Yeah, but they can do it either way.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Well, and that leads into, so we had the tiny home craze.
Yep.
And I don't know if anybody knows this, but the tiny houses, it was almost impossible to get a mortgage on a tiny house. You had to pay cash because it was considered personal property versus real property, because you can move it. I was
right.
Like, you just drive it all around. But this bill is going to address smaller dollar mortgages, which a lot of people have not been doing. I don't have a number for what it means to go from like a regular mortgage to the category of a smaller dollar mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking the sub $100,000 mortgages, which nobody really liked,
yeah,
at all.
And we don't have here. Can you even get a lot for that anymore? I mean,
yes,
like legit?
You can. Yes,
you can.
You can. Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. You can get a lot. I saw one the other day for $54,000. I don't know that anybody there.
Okay. All right. I'm glad you clarified that, because I was like, oh,
yes.
Okay.
So this also addresses, this is the part where I usually like my eyes glaze over when I'm like, when it talks about reforms to the HUD program,
mm-hmm,
the Housing and Urban Development, we're,
mm-hmm,
going to skip that part.
Okay, perfect.
I'm just not that smart.
We can Google it.
Yes. So one of the things that I did think was interesting is the reforms that HUD's doing to the homelessness problem. Now, whether we like to talk about it or not, homelessness does exist here in Kendall County.
Okay. It's okay to cough.
It's terrible. But I think one of the things that it's going to be interesting is that if you have an empty office building, why aren't we converting it into affordable homes? Because most of the time, that's a simple fix.
Right.
Veteran services. We have a homeless veteran population that is rapidly growing, not just in Kendall County.
Everywhere.
Kerr County is seeing it.
So speaking of veteran, and you may not know, and I'm just throwing this out there, are we getting some sort of VA hospital or VA something?
What we is are. This? We're getting a VA clinic.
Clinic.
Yes.
So it's not going to be a bed at a hospital.
I don't believe so. No, it's a clinic where service or veterans can go and get their health care.
Okay, I love that.
I think it's a fantastic idea. As the daughter of a 100% disabled veteran, I could not be more excited.
Interesting. So we don't know how that came about, and that's not what this is about. I just was being nosy.
So I do know a little bit about it, because the VAs make a concerted effort to alleviate some of the issues of people who live far away from VA hospitals.
Okay.
If anyone who's ever visited Audie Murphy, it's like an entire day process, mostly because you have to park so far away that it takes you 5 hours to walk from your parking spot into the hospital. But it's just, they're overwhelmed with the amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Audie Murphy in San Antonio. We have the VA hospital in Kerrville. Creating VA clinics will alleviate some of the issues that veterans have with getting timely care.
I love that. Yes. I love that you know that. So thank you. Because that was just a surprise question.
Sandwich generation over here. I got it. So one of the things that's, I think, the biggest part of this is... And Ashley and I were talking about those institutional buyers. And institutional buyers are basically these really large companies that have large real estate portfolios, whether it's a real estate investment trust, like any of those vehicles that people use to invest in real estate. I wasn't aware of what a large portion of Texas real estate was purchased by institutional investors from 2008 to 2012. Obviously, it helped us with our issue when all that craziness was going on. I also didn't realize that Texas is one of the four biggest states that were impacted by institutional buyers.
And I want to make sure, for my own knowledge, when we're talking institutional buyers, we're not talking the little mom and pops who's buying, you know, five little rent houses.
No.
We're talking about the big boys who come in and buy huge amounts.
Correct.
Like at the development phase or shortly thereafter.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And examples here in Kendall County, there were several neighborhoods probably around that 2010 time when they were getting built. 50% of the neighborhood was purchased by an institutional investor.
And that's one that's here in Kendall County.
Correct. And their whole focus was to purchase the property and then rent it, because those rents, obviously you can increase the rent.
They're making money.
Making tons of money.
And you're right. I mean, I had no idea.
Mm-mm. Well, and the challenge is that it really changes the face of a community. When not just because people are renting there, but because home ownership definitely is different than somebody who rents.
Absolutely. The pride just, that you take it's
just
is different.
There's just no mm-hmm. way around it. But what they're trying to do is get these institutional investors no longer able to continue purchasing property at this rate, because we have a housing problem. And especially with that first time home buyer price point. We'll use KB as an example, or Lennar Homes or something. I know there's a large Lennar neighborhood going in Kerrville. It could easily be purchased almost exclusively by an institutional investor coming in. These homes are $240,000 or less. All day long, they can buy these.
Right.
And then you've created a neighborhood where people who are struggling anyway to get into the market, they can't compete.
Yeah.
Because these institutional investors are also sometimes paying cash.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to compete. So they're looking to put the kibosh on that. That does not mean that these institutional investors have to divest themselves from the properties they already own. It also doesn't mean that they can't continue this trend, the build to rent trend.
Which we have some of those.
We do, Embraer, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, I've heard.
I'm curious to see what that looks like, you know, as investors do that. I mean, obviously that company built the whole neighborhood and then they're going to rent it. Which is a little bit different. However, they probably participate in some sort of investment vehicle for other people.
Yeah.
So the aim for that is specifically to open up the first-time homebuyer market in a way that it hasn't been able to be accessed for a long time.
You know, and the thing to remember is we are not talking just specifically Kendall County. This is everywhere. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, some of this really does affect us and some of it doesn't affect us. Right. And so, I mean, but that whole institutional, that's kind of eye-opening.
Well, it was eye-opening because I know working with first-time home buyers, you know, it's no different than someone who buys a luxury vehicle. If you're going to buy a luxury vehicle and you're going to spend $250,000 on it, somehow, some way, the impact to you is a little bit less than that person who scraped up $5,000 for the down payment on a $20,000 car.
Right.
Just the way it is.
Right.
It's no different than in housing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other challenge, too, is that at the institutional level, they're able to swoop in with these buyer, with these builders and make deals so early on.
Right.
That you don't even know. You don't even know.
Yeah.
And it's true, houses that are primarily neighborhoods that are rented, then they just don't have the same pride of ownership a lot of times.
And we don't mean that ugly. I mean,
no,
you know, it is what it is. And anybody, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's not a judgment.
I'm not saying
statement.
Everybody that rents is not, you know, accountable. And that's not what we're saying. We're just saying that.
So the other thing with institutional investors, what they're trying to do is maybe temper some of this home price increase.
Right.
Nothing in this bill is going to have a magic wand that says, okay, we're going to stabilize housing prices, because we probably aren't going to stabilize housing prices.
No.
until we do something really wrong and have way too many houses and not enough buyers, that's not going to happen anytime soon. Hopefully ever. But it is geared towards just slowing the pace of price increases on homes.
Yeah.
So we will see. This is, I think it impacts mostly the new builds, not necessarily resales, but I mean, I'm sure it's resales as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's going to be very interesting to watch.
I do too. I mean, it's interesting enough that they feel like they need to do something. I mean, so that tells you on, you know, a nationwide level, somebody thinks we have a problem, and I'm not going to say that we don't. So
the powers that are much smarter than me think we have an issue. And I think the other thing too is that, I mean, I don't like to discuss politics all that much, because it can be so icky.
Right.
The fact that this has been across the board from the very beginning a bipartisan issue, this has nothing to do with what your political affiliation is. Everybody's recognizing that this hits all of us. I think it's a good thing.
Right.
Because we don't often get that opportunity. We don't get the opportunity very often at all.
Right.
To go, okay, this is an issue. We just need to address it. We don't care what side of the aisle you sit on.
Yeah.
So,
agreed.
Okay. So,
any other points we want to talk to
about? So that was pretty much what it addressed. I thought it was really interesting because, again, it addresses some very interesting points that will affect our industry, and it will affect the economy.
Right.
So,
it's always interesting to watch, you know, when they come out with this stuff and they're like, okay, this is the anticipated effect. This is what we're going for. And I feel like that's never really where we hit. Right?
Well, it's the, oh my gosh, we never thought about that.
The consequences of our actions.
Well, and one of the things that they wanted to address as well is education. And which that was the part that I was like, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had this talk when Caleb was here from a financial advisor standpoint of, we're no longer dealing with a generation that understands the importance of savings.
Right.
It is an instant gratification. And homeownership just rarely happens on an instant gratification level.
Right.
So we have to have a fundamental shift. And maybe your experience with these young first-time home buyers is going to help. You know, I also think the conversation will continue about parents gifting inheritance when children
now
are young,
now
versus later, because it's true. I mean, the impact it could have now sets your kids up for the generational wealth avenue through real estate. if they can get into a house with their 20% down and a good interest rate,
right,
and off they go, versus, you know, $100,000 when they're 65.
Right.
That's going to be a very interesting conversation. I'm sure all the people will have all of the
right
opinions to weigh in on it. But I'm curious how the education piece is going to go into that. Mm-hmm. I think as an agent, we do a lot of education from a buyer's side. Even if people have purchased multiple homes, it's always brand new because you don't do it every day.
And it's a big purchase and it's, you know, got so many moving pieces and parts and there's so many different things that can happen and be an option and, you know, all of those things. So no transaction is ever the same. And I don't care if I am closing two houses in the same neighborhood side by side, those two transactions will, even if same sales price, same everything, they're going to be different.
Yes. Well, and I think the interesting thing is that I've got a lot of buyers who the last time they purchased a house was, say, maybe 10 years ago.
Mm, and it's way different.
And it is so different. The forms are different. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started. Our forms changed this last month.
I want you to tell me about that.
Oh, God. Okay. Anyway.
I've been going to take a class and I haven't. So maybe you could just educate
me. But just being able to talk to them and say, hey, look, you know, things are very different. You know, the whole conversation of all the different things we can negotiate within a contract.
Yep.
And that seems to be just birth changing, like life changing for people. Like, what do you mean? I said, yeah, we don't have to just do it that way anymore. Yeah. Seller concessions are a big thing right now in our area. Just sellers being willing to pay some closing costs. Mm-hmm.
Whatever. That's a sign of the market, in my opinion. Is. Always. Very much
so. Yeah. Very much so. The way we communicate our earnings has changed. That's what a couple of the changes on the forms is how they want us to talk about commissions and who pays those and all of that other good stuff. It's our least favorite thing because straight away people are like, what do you mean? Why do I have to talk about it like this? We just got used to the other way. Now we've got to start doing it this way. They always have been, always will be negotiable. But sellers need to know they better be competitive.
Right.
Because the buyers know somebody else will be. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard. But again, that's the nature of competition.
Yeah.
You either keep up or else, you don't. And don't get upset about it when your neighbor with a totally different transaction is willing to say, you know, I'll give a little here and I'll give a little there. Because I understand this is what's going to help get this buyer into this house. And if you dig your heels in and you're not willing to, sometimes sellers can't, let's be honest.
Right.
They just can't. And that's and a different
And I have had a couple of closings lately where the seller had to bring money. And that, again, is a sign of the times. And it is nauseating, you know, because that's not where anybody wants a transaction to end up.
No, for sure. But if you purchased a home 2 years ago or 3 years ago, especially the 2023 buyers, really, really can be in a pickle.
Bad shape.
Yeah, because your home is now, I have three people. Their home is now worth probably 100 to 150 less than they bought it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these are brand new homes. These are resales.
Yeah.
Forever and a day. So, yeah, it's just about being, it's just one about being educated about what's going on and trust your agent.
And we've talked about this, you know, just understanding and listening and getting a good agent. And ad nauseum, I feel like we talk about that. And still, I have people coming in here, I'm going to sell this for sale by owner. And I just want
to. Well, but here's the deal. I get it to a certain extent. If you look at what an agent, if you just look off the top, okay, agents make X amount of dollars. And really, if all you wanted me to do was open a house for you because you've looked at Zillow, you've done all that stuff. I mean, Zillow can, I mean, it's a great tool to look at homes.
Right.
And if all an agent does for somebody is open a door, yeah, they should adjust their commission accordingly. But opening that door is, I mean, it is like 0.5% of the work that goes into making sure that that transaction gets to the closing table. And that you're well taken care of.
And we probably have talked about this. I feel like I'm saying that a lot, this podcast. But so often, there are so many things that are going on behind the scenes that the buyers and sellers do not even know is happening. Mm-hmm. And the agent staying on top of, the appraisal's not in, the this happened, the that, all of the things. And always I'm like, okay, well, have you told the buyer or the seller? No. Now I'm not, you know, we're going to work through this. I'm going to get through. Okay. Well, so they do not understand and appreciate the fact that y'all are having sleepless nights because yes. all this stressful stuff is happening in the background. And y'all are just smoothing it over and making it all happen, you know, and then the buyers at the closing day, this is the smoothest transaction ever. And literally, I want to fall out of my chair because I'm like,
and the agent it looks like maybe she's been electrocuted.
Yeah, hair on end, hasn't, yeah, slept in a week, full of coffee, the whole nine yards. But
well, and I think that's some of the it's just the unintended consequence of technology and having
right.
tools and ChatGPT and all the things. It's going to get you a little bit down the road. It really is. Yeah. Absolutely. And then it has, there is no way you can get any farther, especially if there's someone savvy on the other side of something and you're going to do this all by yourself. Well, the agent is obligated to work in the best interest of their client. So if you're not represented, the other agent's just going to,
right.
work for their clients.
Right.
And yeah, we can talk about being an intermediary and trying to be, you know, fair and whatnot. But I think sometimes depending on the situation just means it's not fair for anybody.
Right.
Because then you're not working. You're just refereeing.
Right.
You're not advising.
Yeah.
But my hope is that as we flush out some of these technology things, I mean, I think about, do you remember Open Door? Forever in a day, I felt like Open Door was the biggest thing because they bought all these houses.
Uh-huh.
All you needed was an app to go in. Mm-hmm. You had, I mean, as an agent, it was very frustrating because you were never actually talking to an agent. You were talking to somebody who just answered the phone.
Mm-hmm.
That created a real issue. It was fine when Open Door was an institutional purchaser. They just bought tons of houses. You don't see them around very much anymore because those interest rates rose. People weren't buying houses like hotcakes and people were getting burned.
Right.
Big time.
Right.
Because if you don't actually have a good seller's disclosure, people who don't want to negotiate for repairs.
Right.
I mean, it's just things will flush out. And right. as a country and as a society, I think every time we have a challenge, we freak out about it for a little bit and then we find a way through. Mm-hmm. Because really, if we don't find a way through, that's just not an option.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. We've talked about that a lot.
Yeah. And we'll keep talking about it because I don't know. I think it's just a different mentality these days.
But you know what? I feel like our industry goes through this. It's cyclical. You mm-hmm. know, the ups, the downs, mm-hmm. the buyer's market, sellers. I mean, we never have 2 days that are alike. And we always work through it and we figure it out and we will continue to do that. I will say that this whole institutional thing, that I was very shocked by that. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad now that I know more that somebody else has noticed it and is saying, okay, we don't think this is in the best interest of the American people.
Well, it's just a huge hindrance to entering the market for first-time homebuyers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Okay, so,
mm-hmm.
back on the new forms.
Okay.
Okay. So, really and truly, the major difference is going to be how the compensation is written, right?
Correct.
And that sentence, and I think it's like 12A or B or C or something like that.
That's on the contract and on paragraph 12.
Okay.
When it talks about settlement charges.
Yeah, where it says seller's going to pay these things, and then it says buyer's going to pay these, but you're supposed to look back up at the fact that that's a seller pay. That's what they've corrected, right?
Yes, because in the listing agreement that also changed... Now, some of it's still a little bit confusing. I think what we're going to, regardless of what those forms say, we still have the opportunity to help our clients understand and to structure those in the easiest way for our clients to understand what's going on. I think the changes, I always like to think the good. The changes were made to help with transparency and clarity.
Okay.
And we're so exhausted from so many changes just over the last 2 years
mm-hmm.
that as agents and probably title companies, you're like, this is so stupid. Why do we keep changing this? from a consumer standpoint, my hope is that it's easier for them. We don't like it because it seems to be an unnecessary change, but hopefully it adds some clarity for consumers.
And for us as the title company. Yes. I'm telling you, so we got to the point, because every agent read that whole paragraph differently, we got to where we were like, look, just send it to us in writing what we're supposed to collect.
Yes.
Because at this point, you know, Agent A is telling us that this sentence means this. Agent B is telling us it means this. Two completely different versions.
So that was part of the problem, because it was left to interpretation from the broker. And I talked to a lot of different brokers, large, big ones versus our small ones.
Yeah.
And we all interpreted it a little bit differently. And there was no one
who would give you a straight answer.
Right. And this is a little bit of a knock on our track, because their legal hotline isn't able to give us advice. And so they couldn't tell us yes or no, because you could interpret it
either way.
Right. Which I thought was maybe, okay, fine, that's supposed to help my client. Whichever way they want to understand it, we can do that. But now there's no, this is, we're really in the weeds.
People we are like, in the weeds. Heck? You can turn us off now.
Bottom line is that the goal is to make it easier for clients to understand how things are done and what gets paid and how it gets paid.
Perfect.
I always find it fascinating, though, because our industry is one of the most scrutinized for how we make our money. I guarantee you no one's looking at their attorney going,
right,
can we negotiate your hourly rate?
Yeah.
Which I find, I don't know, that's a little bit of a disservice, considering maybe more often than not, instead of people seeing all the good they don't always see the good we do, and they certainly don't see the bad we keep them from.
Right.
They don't realize how we're the bumpers on a bowling alley.
Right.
On a bowling lane.
Keeping everything straight.
And the goal is always to like knock as many pins down as possible, because only unicorns get strikes.
Mm-hmm.
So they just don't see that more often than not, we keep them from disaster.
That's why when the other day when we were in that closing and the buyers made the comment about, oh, this was the smoothest transaction. And I looked at the agent and I was like, oh, my. I mean, literally 30 minutes before, we didn't think it was going to close.
Oh, gosh.
No, I'm talking, we were down to the wire.
Oh, gosh.
The whole nine yards. Yeah.
No, I had one of those.
Uh-huh. Jeez Louise.
And the lender was like, I want you to give me 24 hours before you start raising the concern with your client, because maybe we can get this done.
We got it done. And that's what ended up happening on this one. You know, and more often than not, that is what happens. But again, the buyers didn't even understand what their agent had done for them, and all the things that she had done, and all the conversations that had been had, and the text at 10:30 the night before, and at 7 o'clock that morning. And, you know, I mean, it is not open that door and forget about it. That is not what this is about. And sometimes I think that you guys as agents, there's a disservice being done, because you want your client to feel like it was smooth and everything was wonderful. Well, the only way to do that is to keep them from having hair on fire through the whole thing, which means your hair's on fire and they think the whole thing went, you know, like smooth as gold. No.
Well, I used to say in the beginning, I was like, if I do a really good job, you're going to think I didn't do very much at all, and this was the easiest transaction. And I stopped saying that because I realized they're never going to see.
No, they don't. They're
never going to understand what between two agents,
the lender,
sometimes the lender,
appraiser,
the appraiser, the title company,
BA, inspector.
Yes. Like they just, and that's part, I think that's just part of it. It's what you accept when you do this as a career.
Because y'all love what you do. You don't do it for the glory.
Well, we don't get paid until it closed. So we darn well better love it.
Because
we're a little bit insane. As are you.
Some days, more so than others.
Well, we hope we didn't bore anybody to death, but we thought this was maybe worth talking about, because we don't often get like
in the weeds,
broad reaching legislation changes in the housing market. So, I think it's going to be interesting to watch.
Okay, you guys know where to find us, right?
Yes, Facebook. We are at The Closing Table. You can find us on Instagram at closingtable, or if you want to send us a question, we are at closingtable@gmail.com. And we are super grateful to be here on Kendall County Rocks.
Yeah, we enjoy you guys. And if there's anything y'all want to talk about or hear about, please feel free to reach out. We would, you know, love to have some ideas of what it is that our listeners would like us to touch on.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, as always, it was fun.
Lovely.
Let's not wait 5 years
Let's not.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to At the Closing Table with Arielle and Ashley. Make sure to follow us on social media at The Closing Table. And if you want to listen to any of our previous podcasts, open the Reggae Rocks app and click on the podcast tab. Until next time, we'll see you at The Closing Table.